Wednesday, March 21st, 1985, at 7:01. Will please come to order. Let the record show that Representative Davis, Representative Pinalberry, Representative Maru, Representative Schultz, Representative Cato are present. We have before us this morning some exclusive bills that will probably have a very difficult time putting out a committee in, as much as the expert witness is not quite so expert.
True.
Anyway, I'm being a little bit facetious. It's bright and early in the morning and the sun's shining, which is unusual for us. We have before us HB 250, enacting a special appropriation to the Department of Transportation Public Facilities for bituminous sulfate treatment of the Nistler Road and providing for an effective date. Representative Schultz, would you like to speak on your bill?
Yes. The Nistler Road is a road that goes past the Delta School, and it was put in about 3 years ago now, and it's probably one of the, well, it is one of the most heavily used roads in the area, coming in off of the, well, off of Remington Road and out in the Clearwater area for people coming into town to work and make it. It goes right by the school, and there's a tremendous dust problem. Since the Canadians have experimented with this and really, it was a high-float emulsion or something that they
right.
used. And anyway, it's been expanded upon, and the state of Alaska has done some work on it, and they put some experimental roads in the Fairbanks area, and they've held up pretty well. Anyway, that's what this appropriation is for, is to put a high-float or bituminous sulfate.
Representative Davis, do you remember those pilot programs that they did? One was on Pegler Road, wasn't it?
Right.
Have you been over them at all? What kind of...
Randy Phillips is the expert on this one. I'm not... The thing that I've heard about these roads, the reason why they're not used very much, or they're used a lot more than in the Yukon than they are in Alaska, is in part, I think, because of the fact that... Yukon has a drier climate, except for our interior, and that's I think that's part of the reason why these need to be placed only on the interior is has something to do with the water, the moisture content of the coastal communities. But but I really don't understand this very much, except I've heard it's an inexpensive alternative to asphalt, and it's some kind of a surface treatment that. Supposed to would hold up pretty well. But.
The road that you travel on going back, 90% of that will be, except on the American side, but will be the high float emulsion that the Canadians have put in. The Alaska Highway on the Canadian side through the Yukon is all that. That's high float emulsion. Not asphalt.
I'll give you a little bit of my expert on it, because I've been going over for a long time talking with the engineers and Whitehorse and things like that. In fact, it was this transportation committee that convinced our DOT that they should get together with the engineers and Whitehorse and try the pilot program. And I haven't heard the direct results of all three places, except the ones that one at Haines was a disaster for the reason that I think you're mentioning, Mike, was a coastal area and too much moisture. But it is a fantastic topping for a road. Virtually the entire Alcan Highway is paved with this. And if any of you have driven from Skagway or
Whitehorse?
Haines Junction on into Anchorage, the part of Canada that you drive on is all this bituminous high flow emulsion.
You can paint it.
Representative Maroon?
I have three or four questions. The first one is, where are the other two pilot projects?
I can't... Susan, just being informal here, Susan, do you remember where they are? There's another one in Fairbanks, and the other one was in Haines.
Right,
Pegler
there's
Road.
One in each region. I can't remember the exact location.
Yeah.
There is a draft report out there, briefly.
There's two experimental, on the Richardson from Delta going into Fairbanks, there's two different stretches that are about 100 foot long or so. It's white. I mean, but it's an experimental area. That's the road is white in that area. And I don't know whether that's a bituminous surface treatment or not. I don't know.
No, this one definitely was on Pickler Road. There was another one. And then the one at Haynes. But it's something that DOT is really looking into for a lot of our roads in the state of Alaska, particularly, as Mike says, in the interior, because of the type of surfacing it does. It can be graded, it can be taken care of just like a dirt road, except that it isn't a dirt road.
What would be the length of this road?
I think it's 7 miles, I believe.
And what's at each end of it now? What's it going to connect?
It connects Delta Junction with I believe they call it, it's either Remington Road or Clearwater. They changed the name of it here about 2 years ago. It's a Remington Road that goes out through Clearwater and OHM, the farms, and all that ag land up there.
You think it's anything about a school?
It goes right by the Delta School.
Do you have any idea what the traffic flow is there?
It's very heavy. One of the more heavily used roads in the Delta area. It really is.
You wouldn't know what the numbers are. Like, is it?
I wouldn't have.
500 vehicles a day, 200 or 5 million? Or?
Less than 5 million. No, I would say a couple of hundred vehicles a day. And most of those would be in the mornings and the evenings after work.
Are there any further questions, Representative Schultz, on HB 250?
No questions.
Davis?
The prime sponsor of this. But I wanted to, someone from transportation.
They're merely here to observe unless we want to ask them some questions.
This was proposed at one time, and they didn't do anything on it, but to do this with the, they use that calcium chloride on the Denali to keep the dust down in the that 125 mile stretch from Paxton over to Cantwell. And there was some talk at one time about going through it and putting this kind of a surface on that road rather than go through with the whole paving of it.
You know, what was interesting in prior meetings. What was interesting was that we thought the Canadians had all the ideas on this road construction. What we found out in some subsequent meetings was that actually Canadians were looking to Alaska for some of what we're doing, cold weather construction. So, I mean, they obviously have got a head start on us on this this one particular. What are they called? BT. What's it? Buzzword for that?
BST.
BST. Yes. But there's other things that we're doing that, you know, in terms of research that the Canadians are watching us on. So I think our interest in that BST project kind of brought some of the research together from both sides.
It was purely economics is the reason that the Yukon territories went to this, because they just simply could not afford to go in and they didn't have the matching funds or anything else. And their economy with the mines closing and everything else, they just didn't have the dollars to go in and lay the asphalt down, about $1 million
right. Are there any further questions on the bill? Representative Penalberry.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. When was the road built?
I believe it was built about 5 years ago.
Let's say 1980. Was it just widened? There must have been some kind of a path there.
There was a trail there.
So now we have a road that's 24 feet across or something like that? What's the plan in the deal? And this is really a DOT question. They must have, when they build a road, they must have a plan for when it's going to require paving or resurfacing. I just wonder what DOT's plan is and how much we're advancing the plan.
We don't have anyone from DOT here, but with the exception of Susan, and she's here as an observer. Or do you have an answer to that, Susan?
No, I don't, but I can find out.
All right.
Yeah, I can just kind of show you what's all. Jack Warren Road goes out this way, and this is 7 miles and 9 miles out. Anyway, the whole, this is just all subdivision of Maple. There's just been a trail that exists. It may come through right from here, right into Delta, if there's such a school. And it's just people no longer have to go out and get on the Alcan and come in, and they just take this road. So it serves all the people that are out in here, coming right into the public country.
This sounds like a low-cost alternative to paving, and it's 7 miles and it costs about $1 million. I'm trying to remember what the rule of thumb is. Maybe, you know, in terms of what for paving a road, the dollars per mile.
$1 million a mile.
I think it's 1.2 now, isn't it?
Is it 1.2 now? I know it's just
that's
been.
That's
been
$1 million. Is that for building or is that for paving?
That's for building.
What about just paving?
I don't know the figure for just paving a road.
You know what? I found out for a bike path, it's just for a bike path, it's $100,000 a mile.
That's for building and paving and both? Yeah, there. Are there any further questions of Representative Schultz? If there are no further questions, the chair would entertain a motion to move the bill out of committee.
I so move.
Representative Davis has moved the HB 250 out of committee. Are there any objections? If not, so are you.
Just want to get this dog out of here.
Okay.
Hit the nail on the head. No.
We have before us your next bill. HB 268, our star actor today happens to be Representative Schultz. This is an act making special appropriations to the Department of Transportation Public Facilities to determine the feasibility of building Cantitia Road and providing for an effective date. Representative Schultz, would you like to speak on your bill?
Yes. The Cantitia area, there was money set aside 20 years ago, I believe. The money was there, and when Dick Lyon was in and making a determination as to what the future of agriculture was going to be over in the Cantitia area, they withheld some of that, those monies for the construction of the bridges, etc. Anyway, this road, if it's ever built, will provide. And I believe that it's one of the things that we haven't established any new roads in the state. And this is one area where it's a very popular recreation area. There's the potential of some mining resources back in the Cantitia area. It's also got the potential of agriculture. The studies they've done over in the Cantitia area, they found out that there's about a 2 week longer growing season than they have in the Delta area. The topsoils are tremendous over in that area. There are future plans of disposing this land in smaller acreages and homesteading, etc. And I just think it's good public policy to begin before we start having land disposals back in these areas and then come back in after the fact and start building roads, that we begin planning accordingly. And they got the plans on the books. I think that to go ahead with it, that we should start providing some of these services that we're going to end up providing anyway, if they're going to go ahead and do it. Because I just feel that the state should not dispose of any land back in that Cantitia area, which they have already, but they shouldn't dispose of any land back in that Cantitia area until these kinds of things are in place. And I encourage the DOT to do that in any area, if it's down in Homer or wherever, before they go back in and dispose of land, that we make a commitment that we're going to assist the people in getting a road back in there, or a financial commitment to roads, and a possible financial commitment to getting power back into them. There's a lot of discussion on this whole thing. There's a lot of backup material that you have in here that's been put forth by Senator Hill, and he has a companion bill over on the Senate side. And there are some claims and mining claims back there already. There's some very very good mineral potential back even beyond this area also.
What are the native
corporations? Representative Finalberry.
What are the native corporations in there? If the Nana Village Corporation has a position on that, what would go on too?
How do you print the name of that? I don't know. Senator Coghill, if he were here, he could answer that because he, was out there. And I don't know whether there's anything in here.
In previous Transportation Committee meetings, we have discussed this. And I haven't heard any adverse statements by Native Regents on this. We talked about Joe Chackett. Scott, did you wish to testify on this?
Yes, Madam Chair, if I may. I'll be very brief.
All right.
Should I come up now?
Would you like to come up first? I noticed the sheet wasn't over there, and I noticed when you came in, you looked for it to sign.
Yeah. Sorry I'm late. For the record, my name is Scott Heilman with the Alaska Environmental Lobby. I won't take very long since you have in your packet a position paper on the Senate bill, which is identical. I think those arguments carry over. Just wanted to touch on three quick things. It seems to me that the three reasons that have been put forth on the Senate side and what I hear this morning, there's three basic reasons for building this road, and I'd just like to go through them real quickly. The first that was discussed on the Senate side more than here was tourism. People were concerned that the park road isn't sufficient to carry the amount of tourists into the park. I think the Park Service is very cognizant of that too. About that point, I'd just like to mention that the Park Service is studying how to do that, and I think that you can see in the Park Service letter they're being very polite about this idea, but I'm not sure if you read through the bureaucraties that they're very excited about it. So I just wanted to point out that if that's the point that you're thinking about why we should have this road, then I think the Park Service is the one that should plan it, and if they decide that they this is one of the options they would like to pursue, then I think it's a different ballgame. The second point that people have brought up is the mining in Kantishna, and that has to do with the access that there are valid claims in Kantishna. People are mining there. As it stands right now, those miners are allowed to use the park road in the off hours. And in testimony on the Senate side, even though people thought, no one really came forward and said that they had any problem with the way it works now. And I haven't really heard any problems with miners coming forward and saying that that's a nuisance because they do have access to the road. And that brings up another point, which is if this road being proposed for this study is to give another access to those miners, we still have the same conflicts, which is we have a road, a heavy-duty road for trucks for mining, and we have a road being used for tourists at the same time. So it seems to me you're going to have the same conflicts with this road as you would with the first road. And Madam Chair, the last point I'll bring up very quickly is the point that Representative Schultz spoke of this morning. That's I believe he was referring to the Tochaket resource area as an ultimate as a new agricultural project. As far as I know, that has not been approved, and in fact, Senator Coghill's discussing that in another bill over there. So I fully agree that if land disposals take place, we can't be in the same position as we were with the Chase land disposal, where we don't have roads to them. That's silly. But I don't think that this is been decided yet that this area will become a land disposal or a new agricultural project area. So while I agree that we should talk about building roads to those new kinds of areas, I think we need to decide whether we want to have that area first or not. That's all, Madam Chair.
Pardon me?
All right, yes.
But we have already disposed of land on the Kantishna.
Madam Chair, Representative Schultz, on the river, on the Kantishna
right.
River?
Right.
I can't
and
speak
anyway, to that. And we've disposed of it on the river, we've disposed of it at Dune Lake, we've disposed of it at, in a lot of places throughout the Kantishna area. And I think that the original plan, and in fact, this is some of the, except for the Tokyo area, this is some of the largest amount of state-owned land in the interior that they can dispose of in large blocks and come up with some kind of a development process. you know, as I've said before, is my only feeling is that the Department of Natural Resources has created just a burden on the interior with land disposals that is going to take 20 or 30 years to resolve. And that is by going into areas 7 or 8 or 10 or 15 or 20 miles from a community and disposing of land. And the people just wanted the land. That's all they wanted. They just wanted to get out there and get away from things. Well, once they get it, once they build their place, and once they have their kids out there, then they want a road, then they want a school bus, then they want power, and then you get these petitions with 50, 60 names on it. And these things have got to be thought out in advance, and we've got to start making some kind of a commitment, or even that, or just completely forget it, one or the other.
Mm-hmm.
Representative
Monroe? Mr. Heilman, I notice here a paper from the Alaska Environmental Lobby regarding regarding a position on the feasibility study. And in it, here it's mentioned the environmental impact statement done for the Kentish and Hills Dunkel mine study. Would you care to expand on that? Maybe tell us who did the environmental impact statement and so forth?
Madam Chair, Representative Maru, I really don't know the answer to that question. Who prepared it?
You're acquainted with this?
With the position paper?
Yeah.
Yes, sir. I have not seen the environmental impact statement myself. This was done by a person that lives in that area who was volunteering for a month. I can get that information to you, sir.
Well, I just noticed that it's really strong in its opposition because the environmental impact statement said that it would result in all of these disturbances and reduction of wildlife populations and so forth. But maybe you, I don't know who did it.
Madam Chair, I'll get that information to the committee. I think, you know, the point, I wasn't bringing that up as a point since it was in the pack and didn't want to take up too much time, but I mean, I think that's one of the main problems. And once again, I think that's, if we're talking about spending the state's money, $500,000, it seems to me, just in my own opinion, that we ought to make sure the Park Service is really even going to go along with it, because if you look at any of the study routes, even the one that would go up to the Tochaca Resource Area, all of those routes do go through the National Park, and they're going to have the final say over whether we can do this or not. So before we spend $500,000 of the state's money, it seems to me that it behooves us to make sure that the Park Service would go along with anything like this, and also, and they're going to have all those same kind of questions that came out of the environmental impact statement. Also, it should be mentioned that the Park Service is studying ways to alleviate pressure and provide more access for tourists in the park area, and they're doing that by studying a southern access point on the other side of the mountains. I'm not so sure, and again, I'm not speaking for the Park Service, but it just seems to me, looking at what they're saying, that they're not so excited about this northern kind of access.
I noticed that a lot of these people don't seem to get excited about anything, but they don't bother to come testify when the public hearing is there either, which is just a little bit distressing. Representative Schultz.
Yeah. The thing that we've got several homestead proposals that are presently on the books. One of the proposals that we have is in this Kentishna and in the Tolchakan area. We got another one that's in the up in the 40 mile around Chicken. You know, and those are remote areas. There's no road access to those areas where they're going to have the homesteading. This, it seems to me like, just makes sense that if you're going to, but you know, I would think that DNR would put on hold any disposals of any kind in this area until they're going to find out whether the state, in fact, is going to come in and build a road back in this area. Because it's just kind of like the Fram dealer, you know, you pay me now or pay me later. It doesn't make any difference. I mean, because we're going to pay later if we don't put these things in. Because the people get back there, they're going to put the demands on us. And
Representative Maroon.
I notice in the letter from the United States Department of the Interior that they mention that, I quote, in addition, approximately $15 million is programmed for improvements on the Denali Park Road. So they're already going to improve the existing road. Also, they are going to, I quote, investigate the possibilities for developing visitor access and facilities on the south side of the Alaska Range. So therefore, my question to Representative Schultz is, since the federales here are going to put $15 million into the existing road, and they're also going to investigate, as Mr. Heilman has already said, a southern route, why would we even want to investigate the possibility of any of these three northern routes, all of which would go to the same place that the existing road already goes to, and all of which would be longer than the existing road.
First question I'd like to just wonder about, if I may.
Representative Schultz.
Is, are they talking about, what part of the Denali, from Paxton to Cantwell?
The Denali Park Road is what
well,
we call it.
Denali Park, oh, okay.
McKinley Park Road.
That's fine. I mean, the Denali Park Road,
where,
the morning
road is that?
Wonder Lake.
Where is that road?
That's the existing road.
If I might clarify where it is. It starts at the hotel at Mount McKinley.
Right.
And goes back to Wonder Lake.
Wonder Lake, oh, that's right. What I thought. Madam Chairman, the reason why the feds are putting the money in that road is because of the darn bus accident where I think somebody got killed there last year. That's, if you've been on that road, it's a treacherous road. It certainly doesn't meet any national or state standard for any road that I know of, but the point that I make is the National Park Service, I think, has been, I hope somebody from the National Park Service is here, woefully negligent in maintaining its responsibilities in that park for visitors. Safety is one issue, but just tourist amenities is a whole separate issue, and they've done a lousy job. And they wouldn't be building that road, Mr. Maru, if it wasn't for the accident. They're afraid of the liability that's accruing out of that accident. But the road we're talking about here is from a whole different part of the state.
Right.
And we're not talking, you know, the road that they're improving is the road from the hotel on the south side, from which you cannot even see the mountain, up to Wonder Lake, where you can't see the mountain. I forgot the number of miles.
77.
The road that the tourist bus goes on. But we're talking about a road coming out of off the Nenana, the park's highway here, close to the Nenana area. And it's providing access to the park from a totally different direction. And the experience of the road is part of the pleasure. As someone who likes to go into the parks, the experience of the road is part of the pleasure of visiting the park. And that's what I think it does, in addition to access for minerals. I think it's the tourism, in fact, that I'm interested in.
Representative Murrow.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. In all due respect to my distinguished colleague from Anchorage, this is my old stomping ground. I know this area like the back of my hand. I've been down this road. I've been down all these other little bitty roads, too. And it does not provide access for any other different area. I mean, getting there from Nenana instead of from just south of Healy, just south of Otto Lake isn't even shown on here. What's the difference? It's going to be longer to get there from Nenana than it is from the existing road.
Well,
you can see this is page 2 of a synopsis of the Kentish Access Highway, and it shows you the three routes, and it's clearly the three proposed routes all go to the same point that the existing road already goes to, and all longer than the existing road.
I just say, if you've seen one view, you've seen them all. I just don't buy it.
Representative Davis.
Well, thank you, Madam Chairman. I think what they're talking about is a loop. Is what they're talking about is that's a proposal is to come in from the north and loop into the park and go out. That's what they're talking about. Just look at it here. The road ends here, but the other proposals are to bring roads in from this side and do a big loop. That's what they're talking about. Mike, did you have a comment on that?
Yes. Why would someone want to take a longer route to get to the same location?
Well, it's for those people to come in, for example, come in from the hotel, go all the way to the end of the park instead of going back the same way, go out a different
way. But going back the same way is the shortest way out.
Oh, yeah. I totally agree with you. I do not disagree with that at all. I have a question of the prime sponsor of this, and that has to do with... One is the projected total cost that this road or road that may be. And secondly, I have a question on this. I guess it would be called number one on your proposal of roads. I have a number of people that have land in there. In fact, I used to own land in there myself. I let it go. But concern I would have would be for the people in that area. They're pretty hot about any kind of development in there, let alone a road that would have tourists and you name it running by it. So I guess the question I have is this, you know, is this something that the local residents want, or is this something that they're going to be thrust down their throat, so to speak?
Okay. You're exactly right. Now, these people can probably do it the same way that they do in Southeastern, for example, over here at Hunter Bay. You get seven or eight people living over there, and Department of Natural Resources is going to have a land disposal, what do? They make a park out of it. And that's exactly what they did here the other day in House Bill 44. So in Southeastern, what they do is they just say this is a pristine, beautiful area that can't be disturbed. We live here now. Of course, we got a few years ago, and we'll maintain that type of pristine environment, and we want to make a park out of it. So I suppose these people could ask for an extension of the boundaries and have themselves be included in the park if they want to. And again, it gets just back down to selfishness. People that move out into these areas, in these remote areas, and once the state has disposed of land in that area, they don't want anyone else to live in there. The people in Solana don't want anyone else moving into their area. People in Chicken don't want them moving into their area. Northway, they don't want them moving in. Tetlin, they don't want to move them in. Tanacross, they don't want to move them in. Delta, they don't, you know.
Can I interrupt you?
Yes, go ahead, Representative Davis.
No, as a matter of fact, these people like being being on state land. In fact, they don't want to see this land traded to the federal government to expand the park because they don't want to be the inholders.
Right.
So I'm not saying that they want a park because actually they don't. And I only know a few people who live in there, but they have trap lines and they have they go in there and go hunting and they don't want it to be a park. But I'm not saying that, Representative Schultz. I'm saying I don't know if they want it to be a superhighway either. That's the point. And seems like if this feasibility study seems like part of that should be, it says appropriated to determine the feasibility. Well, I suppose that's okay because here, I don't know if we need 500,000 to do that, but I would think that a part of that would be to determine, what kind of local opposition or support there is for it. Because we're talking $500,000 to determine if it's feasible. I've been in this country too, hasn't it?
Okay. Well, so have I. The people that live out in that area would like to see the road. The people out in that area would also not like to see any more land disposals. But they're not going to be able to have both of them, because we're not going to be able to just continually keep impacting an area to satisfy the urban needs on land disposals. Southeastern is taking up their land and putting it into parks. The North Slope land is tied up in that native land claims. So what the areas that are hit the hardest are the areas in the interior of Alaska. Okay? And then there are certain areas that are impacted the hardest. And before, and they're going to create problems down the road here for development and expansion of a community of any size if they don't start coming up with plans like this. There's a possibility that they may be able to border the park without even going into it, except right at, or well, they may be able to. That may come out of the feasibility study.
Representative Mara.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. I'd like to ask a direct question of Representative Schultz. When I came to Juneau, I drove through your district, and the direct question is why you would prefer to spend money here instead of on the roads in your district, some of which really need fixing up. Why would you rather spend money here instead of in your district where the roads need fixing?
That is my district.
This is your district?
This is right where the Parks Highway comes out, right? This is where it goes over. I don't know exactly the boundary. I think the Parks Highway is the boundary.
This is your district here?
Mm-hmm.
Are you sure?
Possibly. Yes, I know it is.
Cantwell, Anderson. Yeah. Well, I could to follow up on Representative's question then, why would you want a new road instead of fixing a new road in your district as opposed to fixing up some other terrible roads in your district?
Well, we're asking for that also. But some
of,
but some of the areas are being impacted by land disposals to the in the Tok area it's very easy and very cheap to go in and build roads. Okay. I think we've at least got the attention of DNR on disposing of land in the future. I just got a telephone call for an example yesterday. They want to open up a whole bunch of land out on 7 mile curve in Tok. For homesteading, okay? It's ludicrous. If they're going to open up land for homesteading, it would be better off to just sell it on the block, and it would be better if they would dispose of the land that's already adjacent to a land disposal in the Tok area, in the community of Tok, rather than this hodgepodge just skipping around 5, 7, 8, 9, 10, 12 miles, because we're going to end up providing services to these people.
Madam Representative. Make a long story short, I went over this information with some people in the Fairbanks area, and I think that there are some Batoga Teeley shareholders that have a problem with it, but I'm not sure that the corporation's taken a position. But basically, there are a lot of questions. I think the letter from the Department of Interior raises some of the most important questions. And there are land use questions, and there are questions about how this fits in with the northern side visitors center. And I'm convinced that if we wait for the federal government to solve these problems for us, number one, they might never get solved, and number two, they'll probably get solved in a manner that's not in the best interest of the state. But the point is, you can't make an omelet without breaking eggs, and I see the study as being the way to answer a lot of the questions that have come up. And you know, we're not going to answer them sitting around the table. We're going to have to go out and commission a study, and that's why I'm in favor of the bill.
Representative Rudolph?
I disagree. I think there's a lot of problems here. We have an environmental impact statement, which goes into some detail. This is not the statement, of course, but the environmental impact goes into some detail on the adverse, apparently quite adverse, impact on the wildlife in the vicinity. The federal people are already, they've already committed $15 million to improve the existing road, plus the fact that they're investigating the possibilities for developing the south side. So therefore, this road would become kind of a moot point. Thirdly, any of these routes would be longer than the existing road and will end up at the same place that the existing road goes to. And fourthly, they would all go through, as Mr. Heidemann has mentioned, they would all go through a federal park, so therefore the federal people would have to approve it in any case, and they might decide not to approve it. I would say, from what I can see here, and from the lack of enthusiasm in the United States Department of the Interior letter, I would say there is at least a 50% chance that they're not going to approve a road through their park. I think we're just going to be wasting $500,000 here.
Are there any further comments?
I got a couple more questions.
Representative Davis.
Yeah. The question is, Representative Schultz, there is some agricultural land proposed, which includes this number three, includes a bridge across the, I guess that's the Louisiana River, right?
Nah, three
bridges.
Yeah.
Three bridges. And so is it right there in that, it's the middle of that three area, is that correct? Is that approximately where that agricultural land is?
Right. Mm-hmm.
Okay, so that's probably the reason why there's even a proposed road up there. That's what they're talking about.
Right.
And secondly, let's say that portion alone from the other side of the three to Nevada, do you have any idea what they're proposing to spend there? Do you know what that is, approximately? Dollar figures for those bridges and all that?
It was twenty-two miles of road, and I believe that the entire appropriation, which included power and a road going out and the three bridges, $7 million.
Okay. I remember very distinctly the Nanato Jacket discussion, and $7 million was the figure.
I mean, that included the bridges, the road, and power into that area.
For agricultural.
It was 22 miles.
So what we really are talking about is a possibility. I mean, there's a couple things going on here. One is a possible access to Cantishna mine or whatever, but there's also a possibility of we're talking, the feasibility is not just for this Cantishna.
Right, and it's an intertie, and then an eventual intertie with the agricultural area route.
Representative Murrow?
I would gather that, let's say, alternative three is certainly going to be well over 100 miles long. If it's going to be paved, it's going to cost $1 million a mile or more. We're talking about a $100 million road. There's very few people living out there. The other day we were talking about $100,000 per resident of Whittier. We put this road in, we're going to be talking maybe $1 million per resident.
Maybe the relevant thing is the number of users instead of the residents in the area. I wonder about the environmental impact statement. I've not read it. I think I've read probably two environmental impact statements in my life and fell asleep 1,000 times reading both of them. Representative Maru, I wanted to know if you've read that environmental impact statement, if you always take an environmental impact statement on its face value as being accurate.
I have not, Madam Chairman, I have not read the environmental impact statement. I have read this position paper, which quotes from the environmental, or paraphrases or whatever, from the environmental impact statement.
Are there any further questions on this bill? If not, the Chair would entertain a motion to pass the bill out of committee.
I so move, Madam Chair.
Representative Panalberry has moved that we pass HB 268 out of committee. Are there any objections?
Object.
Representative Cabrera has objected. We'll take a voice vote. Representative Davis?
I will pass it out of bill.
Representative Davis, yes. Representative Panalberry?
Yes.
Representative Maru?
No.
Representative Schultz?
Yes.
Representative Cato, yes. HB 268, passing out committee with individual recommendations.
This is Schultz Day.
This is Schultz Day at the in Transportation Committee. He's our star actor. We have before us then HB 271, which has to do an act making a special appropriation Department of Transportation public facilities for payment is to grant the Copper River Valley Association for construction of electrical distribution lines and providing for an effective date. The funding is a nominal $138,000. Representative Schultz, would you like to explain the bill?
Yes. I've kind of explained what happened. Copper Valley Electric contacted us 2 years ago and wanted to run for a couple hundred people down the Edgerton cutoff power. And these people have been requesting power. And I believe that the numbers we had originally were about a couple of hundred, and that they started dwindling from there on down when they started running the line. However, they needed something like $230,000 or $240,000 to do this, and they were going to have to go to the bank. And as you know, every one of us sitting here is faced with the same problem. When we try to get the power companies to go in and borrow some of this money at 2% to build distribution lines back in, the power companies won't take advantage of it because they simply say that the cost that they have to pass on to the consumer will be too high. Well, so we committed the money, $138,000, to give them as a grant, and then they would borrow the $38,000 appropriation was vetoed. They had to sign. I believe their payments are $234 a month minimum. That's the minimum payment for their power for 10 years. So those people are locked in to a $234 electric bill a month. I don't care if they use one light bulb or if they, anything they burn more than that, then they pay for. But their minimum payment is $234 a month. And in visiting with GBEA, in visiting with Alaska Power and Telephone, in visiting with Copper Valley Electric, in visiting with some of the other power companies around the state, they have simply told us that in these areas, and it goes back to DNR, that in the land disposals when they've had them, and then we come back and then we have to put power in, or the people want power, it's costing $1,000 a pole in the Tok area. Gary Hebert, give a couple of names, Gary Hebert and Harold Johnson, just here 3 years ago, had a line run into their place, which was less than a mile, but it cost them $16,000. Now, that's what it cost them, $16,000 to have power run or less than a mile back into their place. So they split the cost, $8,000 a piece. We had another guy over in the Tok area that spent $15,000 just having a line run in. The power companies just simply refuse to borrow even at 2% because of the cost of what it's going to cost them, or the consumer, for X number of years, is just an exorbitant price, and the people just won't do it. We got an area over in the Tope area where we've got the hippie homestead thing. And they called it a hippie homestead bill, but it turned out, and it was based on residency. It turns out that these people, for example, I think the person that had the longest residency was 77 years in the state, and the least number of years was 55.
Yeah, so.
So it didn't end up being a real hippie homestead bill. But anyway, now that we've got a lot of seniors living out there, and they want power in the Tokyo, I think there's about 35 of them, and that's going to cost around $70,000, and they don't have the money to do it. So we've got these kind of things, and we went ahead and made this appropriation, and it was vetoed by the governor last year, and now these people are facing a $234 a month minimum electrical bill as a result of it.
Representative Davis?
I got a question on this, Representative Schultz. I don't understand why they went ahead and made all these commitments to these people or started construction line with sort of betting on the come that the governor was going to veto this, you know, and then socking it to the consumer.
Well,
it isn't their fault that it seems like they made that, they screwed up the Golden Valley or whoever the distribution
Copper people, Valley.
Copper Valley. They screwed up and they're socking it to the consumer. I think it's their management decision that was wrong there. But also, my second question, it says here, I'm just reading through this pretty, in your extensive background on this, I was reading through here, and it says these consumers are paying $117 a month in addition to paying a regular electrical statement. Cost of electricity in this area is 19.1 cents per kilowatt hour adjusted. Well, so that isn't exactly going on with your 271, but I'm sure there's a good reason for that or explanation. But why is that? Why are they paying 19? Aren't they getting that power cost equalization out there?
No, they do not qualify. See, that's another thing. There's now part of my district qualifies for the rural equalization, and part of it doesn't. And those people that are over in the Glen Allen area, that off Copper Valley Electric. Since they get part of their electricity from Solomon Gulch, which is hydro, no, they're part of the four dam pool. So they don't, no.
Are they in the grid or something? Or?
Pardon?
Are they in the grid?
I might take a minute, as much as this is my district also. And when I say my district, Copper Valley happens to be in my district. Valleys and Glen Allen are tied together with the transmission line. However, both of them have to generate by diesel because Valdez takes all the power from Solomon Gulch and then is on diesel generation also. So consequently, that area is not, they're part of the four dam pool situation, not through any choice of their own, believe me. And therefore are not eligible for cost equalization. I can give you an example of my own. We're charged in Valdez 22 cents a kilowatt hour per 750 kilowatts. My electrical bill runs right around $169 a month. I have two refrigerators, a dishwasher, a washing machine, a deep freeze, and lights. And that's a starting motors for the rest because it's propane and oil. To show you the exorbitant amount, that's how much electricity I use. I stay under the 750 kilowatts, not because I want to, because it gets cheaper as you went above it. But that's how much I use.
That doesn't answer the question on Schultz.
Well,
but you're saying that you pay 22 cents a kilowatt hour for
right,
electricity?
Right, up to 750 kilowatts.
And Valdez doesn't qualify for power cost?
No, it's the same group. It's hydro, and along with diesel generation. The hydro isn't big enough to take care of all of Copper Valley. And see, Copper Valley is Glen Allen and Valdez, Mike. It's all the way down the line there. And we have a transmission line. However, they do use diesel generation in Glen Allen and also in Valdez.
I thought the power cost equalization, I realize this is off the bill, but I thought the power cost equalization enabled every community outside of Anchorage, Fairbanks, and Juneau to have cheap power down 9 cents a kilowatt.
Not if they're in the four dam pool situation. And Cordova also is
you know,
part of this problem.
I mean, This whole power thing is a real can of worms, because we start talking about rural Alaska. Now, I've got communities that, you know, feel as though, and do qualify for the rural electrical equalization rate. Anyway, if you look back historically and see what's happened, and they're complaining about maybe the four dam pool or whatever, the state went in and bought them the generators, okay, through grant money. The state came in through and put in storage, bulk storage fuel facilities for these generators. Okay, then they turned around and then provided the fuel to them. And at the same time, they're eligible for the rural electrical rate stabilization. Now, this is all over the state. You know, I mean, there's small villages that have had their entire electrical system handed to them, all their houses electrified and everything else. And so there really can't be a tremendous amount of complaint when because your district, for example, needs power lines run into it. And GBA is not going to borrow the money to do it because they simply can't afford it. I would like to see someone come up with a piece of legislation that we put grant money in, at least on a one-third basis, for everyone's district, where these power companies can go in and borrow two-thirds of the money and are going to get a one-third grant. It's the only way that we're ever going to establish a grid system throughout the state that is going to, for us to be, benefit from any kind of a hydro project, major hydro projects that can exist.
Well,
Representative Murray.
Thank you, John. I've got two or three questions and statements here. One is to Representative Schultz, and that is that if this background is correct, and I can only assume that it is, Representative Schultz is overstating the amount they pay. In fact, he's doubling it. It says here $117 per month.
I didn't even read this, but it's $234 a month is what their minimum payment is.
So you say that this is not true?
Well, I think, Mayor, can I help clarify that?
Yes, Representative Mulberry.
The way I read that is the $117 is the fee for this $138,000, but on top of that, you've got the basic $117, which is your minimum amount if you turn on the light bulb once. If you're a subscriber, you get the minimum rate that's for the electricity you use, which is $170, and you get another $170 charge to help pay for this installation that wasn't reimbursed.
That's not what this says. This says $117 in addition to paying the
regular
electricity.
That's what it says to me. It might say something different to other people.
I'm just reading what it says. Cost of electricity, 19.1 cents per kilowatt hour. So it's 117 plus 19.1 times kWh usage.
I checked with the people on the interesting cutoff, and they are running $234 a month minimum electrical bill, and some of them have used more power than that.
How many consumers would this affect?
I believe it's around 40, but I'm not.
I was just going to say that used to be part of my district, so I'm familiar with it. Representative Penalberry?
Well, I don't think Mr. Murray's done that.
Representative Murray?
I was just going to say that I agree with Representative Davis' first question, and that is why should we pay this? They made an error. They made an error, and what we're going to be doing is essentially rewarding people for making dumb mistakes, and we shouldn't be doing that, because I certainly pay to the Homer Electric Association, and I'll be doggone if I want to reward them for making dumb mistakes. They're supposed to be smart people. It would further seem to me that if Governor Sheffield vetoed this 2 years ago when we had considerably more money, now that we have considerably less money, he's going to be even more likely to veto it.
Very true. Very good. He vetoed the prompt payment bill, and he's going to have the opportunity to do it again. You know, I would like to give him the opportunity to veto this one again. He promised the people on the Edgerton cutoff that he would help them get the power back along the Edgerton cutoff. You know, and then he turned around and vetoed the appropriation. So if there's anyone that's foolish on this thing, it's possibly it's me. Because I put in the appropriation monies that we had last year, 2 years ago, I put in the money, and then GBA contacted me and said, what are the chances of that thing staying in there and not being vetoed? I went to the third floor and asked, you know, and the third floor told me that they would just have to take a look at it when I got here, and I said, well, because these people are getting ready to make a commitment, and I would like to know, and it's just kind of like trying to get a bank loan, and construction season has started, and you're trying to hurry everything up. Well, that's exactly what happened with that one. GB or Copper Valley Electric had to make a decision, and I went up
visited three or four times on the third floor, and my impression was, and my advice was, I believe that, in fact, it will fly, that it will stay in there and it won't have any trouble. And, so, and I asked them, in fact, if they had to cut $130 million or $150 million from anything that I submitted on the capital budget, that they at least give me a telephone call or whatever, and I and let me select for that $150,000 because I wanted that to stay in there. So, I guess if there's anyone dumb on the thing, I guess it'd have to be me.
Representative
Give me the advice.
Comfort Valley Electric, is that a cooperative association?
Yes, it is.
Okay, then it would be in the same class as the one I belong to, Homer Electric Association. I don't, I'm not certain, but I don't think HEA has ever taken state money to build lines. Why should we subsidize Copper Valley Electric and not subsidize all the other, I think there's 13 properties or 11 properties in the state?
That's exactly my point. My point is that in order for you to, in order for your power company, whatever it's called, a Homer Power Company, in order for them, if they got, you've got a land disposal and it's 15 or 20 miles or 30 miles from town somewhere, your power company is not going to run power out there. I guarantee it. And the only way they're going to do it is if you come up with some grant money to assist them in it, because the consumers on the other end are not going to be able to afford it.
HEA, Homer Electric Association, which provides power for the entire Western Kenai Peninsula, will run a line 25 miles if you pay for it. That's what I suggest we do here, that the people who get the power is the ones who pay for it.
You're both talking on the same side of the question.
Yeah, okay.
Representative Davis?
I just go back to my original question, it seems like, for whatever reason, Golden Valley made a mistake here, but I don't think they should be sticking the customers for it. That's my feeling, Golden Valley should have to eat it. That's the way maybe we can right the wrong here, but basically I think Golden Valley is sticking it to the customers, and they made a managerial mistake or whatever you want to call it, because they thought you were more welcome on the third floor than you were or something, but anyway.
Right.
But I don't think that the customer should have to pay for that.
I wish they
have some legal recourse to that.
What about the Fairbanks Anchorage?
Representative Davis, I wish it was Golden Valley. I don't think we'd have this problem.
I meant Copper Valley.
Representative
Pinalberry?
A comment and a question about a friendly amendment. The comment is that, again, I've been watching the energy picture in the state for some time. I think you have to approach each question as a matter of balance and what you do for the state. Representative Schultz, mentioned the things that we have done, especially in rural Alaska, in terms of providing bulk storage and subsidizing transportation. In many cases, the power equalization thing, which I hope we'll be able to get rid of. And there has to be some semblance of fairness with how we treat people. You might argue with all of these things. I would argue against them, but as a matter of fact, they've been done. And I think it's incumbent upon us to just try to treat people as fairly as possible within the means available to the state. I am thinking about what I would do with this bill. I'm not sure I'd vote to pass on it, but this is the Transportation Committee, not the Finance Committee.
Right.
And I look at this as a bill that doesn't, in principle, is there anything wrong with it? And I answer the principal question based on how the legislature has reacted in the past toward the state at large on these kinds of questions. It's not to say that if I was sitting on the Finance Committee that I would fund this as a priority. We don't have purview over all the financial requests from all the bills in the state. The Finance Committee does that. So I guess I'm thinking out loud and saying I would probably vote it out of committee. I want to think about that for a few more minutes. But now that I've said that, I want to talk about a friendly amendment. Again, I'll think out loud a little bit. When I lived in Fairbanks and was paying outrageous electrical rates, there were several subdivisions that were constructed because it was anticipated that all electric homes were going to be cheaper than the diesel, the homes with the oil burners on. And for some reason that didn't turn out to be true. Not only did it not turn out to be true, but those homes that were all electric ended up paying twice as much in their monthly electric bill as everybody else. And I had a small duplex up there that it cost me $1,100 to $1,200 a month just to heat the sucker. When I sold it and this goes for every house that was sold in that subdivision, they turn over every 3 years, they tell me up there, had to take a $6,000 discount to pay for a conversion back to diesel. I just wonder if you'd entertain an amendment to allow all the people that sold these homes and all electric subdivisions in the Fairbanks area to be reimbursed for their $6,000. It's an analogous situation.
Sure.
I'm glad you're not serious about that amendment.
You know, in drawing also, if the consumers, if it was going to be passed on to consumers in Fairbanks and Anchorage, the intertie, if the rates were going to be passed off, and how many millions of dollars that cost several? 100 million? Something like that, the intertie?
Over
100 million.
Over.
Can you imagine what would happen if that intertie, if the cost of the construction of that thing had to be passed on to the consumer in Fairbanks?
That's analogous also, isn't it?
Can you imagine that why they, we'd all go back to, we'd all go back to buying our own generators.
Representative Rhodes, you have another statement or question?
Yes, thank you, Madam Chairman. If we were to approve this, and incidentally I disagree again with Representative Pignol-Barrine that we should not look at the numbers on this. If we approve this out of this committee, and if whatever we sign, we're taking responsibility for the entire bill, not just parts of it. The entire bill does include money. If we do approve this, we not only are going to be rewarding people for making the wrong decision, but we're going to be setting a precedent for the 11, I think it is, 11 electric properties in Alaska. And I suspect this is going to set off a stampede. We're going to bust the dams, and people are just going to be coming at us again and again and again to pay this line here and this line here and this line here and this line here. And this state cannot afford to keep doing this sort of thing. We cannot afford to start it, particularly at this stage of the game, and paying these privately owned electric cooperatives owned by the consumers to pay for their lines going out to certain areas. The people who live out there live there because they want to. They don't have to live there. They can leave at any time, and they can move somewhere else. And we're setting a precedent here, which is a bad precedent if we pass it.
I wouldn't mind that. In fact, I kind of agree with you. I'd like to see a lot of these people move to Homer, but I don't know if they will or not.
Is there any further discussion on the bill? If there's not, the chair would entertain a motion to move the bill out of committee.
I move the dog. I may move the after the dog.
Representative Davis has moved that we pass the bill out of committee.
With individual recommendations.
With individual recommendations. Any objections?
Object.
Objections will have a voice vote. Representative Davis?
Yes.
Representative Pignol-Barrine?
Yes.
Representative Maru?
No.
Representative Schultz?
Yes.
Representative Cato? Yes. The bill has been passed out of committee with individual recommendations. Do anybody leave until you sign all three bills?
The problem was that they'll never go any farther than
that could be.
So we'd make Schultz go good for a day.
Are you going to sign this to Mr. Schultz?
Just get on the radio so you tell them all these bills have passed out of committee. Because you're a member of the powerful resources committee. By the way, you weren't at the committee meeting yesterday. It was quite lively.
You weren't either, were you?
Were you there yesterday?
What?
I understand it.
Oil and gas? No, you keep scheduling these things in direct conflict with my other.
If there's no further business,
I can't be two places
committee
at once.
The committee is adjourned. Oh, excuse me.
Oh, man, before we.
But they've been that. That's what they've been all year.
Mr. Davis,
like
please.
Not all of them.
The DST bill we considered earlier reminded me of something that I want to do sometime, but could we arrange to have the Department of Transportation Research Division or whoever does those R&D programs come and talk to us about the decision-making process for the projects funded with the research money and what their goals are and what, I want to know what they've really done with all this research money over the past several years and what they plan to do for the future.
I think Ms. Fleischauer could arrange that, am I correct?
Yes. Yeah.
All right, would you start to work on that, work with Ron Donna, please?
Okay.
That cantation bill, unless it's craftily done, that's going to be a $500,000 study that's set on the shelf.
Any further business to come before the committee?
Madam Chairman, we had all three of the packets.
Yes.
Okay.
Have we signed all three?
You did.
There being no further business, the committee is adjourned at 8:10.
Did you have one?